today's guests are Emily Current and Merritt Elliott, dear friends of mine, female founders, and celebrity stylists. They founded and sold their first company, Current and Elliott, in 2012. And today, they run the cozy and very feminine line, The Great. They are all about inclusivity and have collaborations with Pottery Barn and have dressed some of our favorites, like Jessica Alba and Reese Witherspoon. Best of all, these ladies are health-conscious moms who are super down to earth. And they decided they could take on the world as best friends. So let's get into how this love story started. How did you guys decide to start a business and when did you become best friends?
Yeah. Hi, this is Merritt. And Emily and I met just kind of in classes at UCLA, and we identified that we had some mutual friends, but also identified that we had a love for vintage denim and that there was a trend happening that people were wearing kind of like snug new denim, and we were still loyal vintage Levi's and Lee fans. We're both from Northern California, so we sort of had the same style sensibility. And we started taking trips to the flea market together and sharing our resources, and we really bonded over vintage denim. And then sat next to each other at graduation. We were seated next to each other.
I always forget that story.
Yeah. And kind of whispered to each other, like, one, we should be in touch. Let's, of course, hang out. But we should also really think about working together, because I think we had similar entrepreneurial goals. And we just kept in touch and we started our own individual freelance careers, our first jobs out of college, and immediately started freelancing as stylists and editorial assistants on the weekends, and like calling each other to help. Hey, I'm styling this shoot for this job. I'm, you know, dressing the mannequins, or I'm doing a runway show. I'm an assistant in a runway show. Will you come help me? And that immediately started doing that right out of college. And then one day we just had enough experience and met enough people and had a low enough overhead that we could take the plunge and just quit our day jobs and become an official styling team.
So, I mean, that it seems like you just jumped from zero to 60. Like you guys were assistants and then all of a sudden you're starting your own business. I understand the low overhead. Can you give me a little bit of a background? Is like, how do you even get a job styling for a runway show or, you know, freelancing? I feel like a lot of times when people graduate college, freelancing seems scary. It's so much safer to just go get a job at a corporation or a fashion line. And can you give us the backstory of like how you even...
Yeah, this is Emily. It's actually a lot more common now than it even was then. It was really not common to not go work at a company. I don't know if it was just partly that we just didn't know, because we did have this sort of this like fearlessness that I don't even know if I would have now. It was like, I don't want to say ignorance because it's the wrong word, but like we just didn't know. And so we weren't afraid of trying, and we just networked and we were willing to do favors for anyone. And we were willing to ask questions and fearlessly pick up the phone and make phone calls that I think even now, maybe I would stop myself and think, is that appropriate? But we just did. And it worked. And I think it was partly the confidence that we had in each other and that we had each other's back, that we were really fearless and trying, and it paid off and it worked. And I do recommend a certain level of confidence, not overconfidence that you know everything, but enough confidence to ask the right questions.
Yeah. And I also would want to point out that we did do a lot of favors. We did a lot of things for free. We met photographers that we liked and offered to style things on weekends. And so it was really about being resourceful. And you don't get paid for your first 300 jobs as a stylist.
Yeah.
And then you start getting paid because you build a book and whatnot. But, you know, we really, really, really worked our butts off, and we networked and we stayed friends with people and said, hey, listen, we're at your service. We can help with this. We know you need an extra hand. Can I do that? And really, I mean, we still do that. But that was really the foundation of how we got so much experience so quickly.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think also we didn't assist for somebody and have the resources to just like pull from runway shows or pull from Chanel. We ended up pulling from Chanel pretty early, but we started mixing in vintage and we started creating a look and like an aesthetic that was really our own because of needing to be resourceful. So like we'd mix in vintage jewelry that we found at vintage stores, or we mix in vintage jeans, which gave us like a very specific aesthetic that people liked, but we did it out of necessity, not because like we were on that journey specifically. It was because we kind of didn't have access to all the things that we needed. And
you had to be frugal and resourceful.
Yeah.
That's amazing. So how long were you guys styling and before you decided, okay, we're going to do this. We're going to start our own business. We're going to be entrepreneurs. Like, do you remember the moment when that happened for you guys or where you were when you made the decision?
Sure. Yeah. When we were styling, we realized that we actually wanted to understand more than just the final moment of a fashion experience, whether it's a shoot or a runway show or an advertising campaign. And we started actually consulting with brands and musicians. And so we kind of helped develop an image or a new campaign. So once we started to understand the backside of the business and we really like building things, like creating stories, creating product. And we started consulting with brands. And then as we continued to style, it was apparent to us that there was a hole in the market for kind of relaxed, vintage-inspired denim for women. And so we were using vintage denim in all of our shoots. People were asking us to go find it for them, alter it for them. And we just identified there was a hole. We spent enough time fitting women that we understood what the fit was that people wanted to wear in all different body types. And we really, again, we just did it. And we just said, you know, we're just going to create a little line, like, because we know we'll use it. We know our friends will buy it. So we did that and the world evidently wanted the same thing. So it kind of, we didn't set huge goals for it to become this success. We just put one foot in front of the other and we're very happy that people liked it too.
Specifically, I've tried to like go to Fairfax Flea Market and buy old Levi's jeans and it does not look good. Like they definitely need to be tailored. Yeah. And you can see that with companies coming back with vintage jeans. I mean, you guys have since sold that company and, you know, there are other companies I'm seeing coming in and trying to do redone jeans and all of that. And that's, but you did it first. And I think there's something to be said about seeing and having that vision and then jumping on it. So how long were you guys in the nitty gritty, working the day to day of that business and Curran and Elliott, which are your last names?
I don't know the exact amount. I think we were there 6 years before we sold, maybe longer. But it went from sitting at a kitchen table sewing tags on to cutting thousands and thousands and thousands of units per style really quickly. And the business grew really quickly, which was really exciting and allowed us to really style. You know, it was really disruptive at the time. And so it was really exciting for us at the time. I think we were looking at the denim industry as a boys club. And there was a very specific aesthetic that was showing up everywhere. It was like a girl draped over a car topless and jeans. Mm-hmm. It was like a very specific look. And I totally liked it, but it just didn't appeal to me and what I wanted to perpetuate myself. And so it allowed us to build a brand that was sort of what we believed in, which was women for women. And how does a woman feel in jeans? And like, we would dress her up in these lookbooks and ad campaigns in ways that we felt like women would connect to versus a man, because the women were the ones buying the jeans. So it just allowed us such a, like a sociological experiment of not only building a brand physically, but building a connection with a customer. And I think it just was really an exciting time for us because of that.
Yeah. And we touched all parts of the business and eventually the business got big enough and we felt like the environment wasn't as beautiful and free as it was in the beginning by the nature of a business growing and there being a lot of cooks in the kitchen at one point. So we felt that we really wanted to continue to blossom as human beings and as designers and creators. And when the opportunity came to sell and exit, it was the most natural, organic thing for us. We were both pregnant with daughters due 6 weeks apart. And we were really excited for change and opportunity. And we knew we had so many learnings from building a successful business that quickly about, we learned about people, infrastructure, quality of life, quality of product, all those things. And so we knew we had all these learnings. We're like, okay, we're going to reset. And we're going to enjoy our successes, enjoy our babies. And then we're going to create a company that is all the great things. It's like all the great things, the great people, the great work environment, the great product, the ethical product, the beautiful styling, the femininity. And And we knew we had it in us, and it was beyond just five pocket denim. And you really, we really had to start a new brand to be able to do that. We needed a new infrastructure. We wanted to new fabrications, new everything. And so we did it. We did our second brand, The Great, and that launched in spring 2015. And you know, we were afraid everyone would just want denim from us, and so we didn't launch with denim. We launched with just wovens and t-shirts and silks, and ended up being really successful. The collection did, and that was really exciting for us too, because you know, it kind of reaffirmed that we have many sides to us, and there's a lot of dimension to what we can do. And there were just new challenges. We didn't fall back into what we knew. We were really learning about new things. And created an ecosystem of a lot of strong women in our office, and we're trying to have a well-balanced life and a career that actually just isn't that brand, that we still continue to style for a lot of our celebrity clients, consult for other companies, do brand partnerships. We wrote a book for Rizzoli, and we knew all those things kind of enriched, you know, our core, which is The Great, but also just, you know, helped us as human beings and meet more connected people, more customers, et cetera.
Yeah. We get asked a lot about this like crucial moment about leaving something with our names on it and our baby and starting something new. And it is such an interesting part of our story. But it's just, it happened so naturally because we knew in our hearts that we weren't in the right place, and that we were so proud of it, but we needed to move forward. And it was really hard to do. And I think a lot of people ask us about that because it's really hard to let something go, but it allowed and opened so many doors for us that now we're so proud of, and allowed us to move upward, where I think we would have been stuck. And it was really jumping off a cliff, which is kind of why we named the company The Great, because it's like this great moment for us, but really the right moment and the right door for us.
I'm sure there are people listening that are curious and either interested in starting a fashion line or, you know, what that looked like. What would you say a couple really big lessons you learned in building Current and Elliot were, and what you aren't doing now at The Great?
I think that there's this idea that you're either creative or you're like left brain or you're right brain. And I think we just decided early on, like, well, we're the creative side. And we kind of identified with that. Even though on the side, we really enjoyed the image development and the more cognitive piece of it. And I think that as we got into an arrangement with manufacturing and for Current Elliot, we were really just like, we're the creative souls. We're going to do the creative piece. But I think we learned immediately that they're so intertwined, business and the creative piece, that you have to work within the business parameters and sort of build into what's working and diminish what's not. And like, there's you have to hold hands. And so immediately we were like, we need to run this business, not just the creative side of it. And so I think one of the main lessons that we learned as we went into The Great was that we run The Great's business. We also creatively direct it and design it, but we run the business, and it's a business, and we're very creative business women, but I never want to separate the two ever again. Like, I really believe you have to be a business person at heart in order to run a company, whether it's fashion or food or whatever it is. You have to know the business side. You can't just come with creative ideas.
Yeah. And I would say now that we have distance from our first company and we're so intimate with our current company, just the value of a founder-led company, particular female-founded led company of female clothing, is so important. And there's just so much noise in apparel. There's so many things happening. And really to have an authentic relationship with your customer, you know, we design what we're both wearing, our line right now.
They look beautiful.
Thank you. And we touch and feel it. And it's so much of what we wear and what our peers wear and what women were inspired by wear. And you feel it in the product, and those are the successful brands. And the brands that kind of are disassociated with, you know, its soul aren't successful. And it's been interesting to watch brands who have, you know, become different things than what they started not succeed, and brands that, you know, remain close to our hearts be successful. And we see that around us, and that's just more important than ever. It's a lot of work. because we are in the meetings, the business meetings, but we also are the ones that are trying on the bottoms. Does this fit you? Does this fit you? How do you feel? You know, those type of things. That's just so more important than ever. And I think that we used to think, oh, the more you're successful, the more you're kind of like in the board meetings and you're not, but it's actually not the case. We go into the store and we talk to the customers and we, you know, we get the feedback and we try and we're more attached to the product than ever. And it's more important than ever.
I love that because if you aren't, then you're going to fall away from what is true to you guys and then feel disconnected from your business and want to leave it again.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that's some of the things that we talk about with any founder-led business is that it's a journey that you're on with somebody and that's ever changing. And sometimes I think brands without like a founder or some soul carrying it forward in an organic way, things get stuck and people change every day. People change every season. People want different things month to month. You have to be on a journey with a brand or a person that way and not just like our brand does X and we do X forever. And I think that's why we're loving to follow and purchase and support founder-led brands because you're on a journey with a person and you're supporting them.
What are some of your favorite founder-led brands? I mean, obviously you can wear the great all day, every day, but I look at each of you and there's cool pieces of jewelry and shoes and jackets and all the things. So what are some of your favorite female founded or founder-led brands?
There's so many to name.
Yeah, there's so many that we just love aesthetically and there's so many that we love just the people as well. I mean, in this journey, we've met people, you know, I don't know.
I mean, I could just give me a category. I'll list them off. Exactly. But I mean, when I, like Eileen Fisher is someone who we look up to so much. I mean, she's still so involved with her business that I'm fascinated by her entire trajectory. I mean, all the jewelry I'm wearing is by Jen Meyer and female jewelry Linda designers. Yeah. I mean, we're really involved with Rebecca Minkoff's organization, Female Founder Collective. And so we've been really trying to get all the female founders that we know to support each other. And there's a seal, actually, Female Founders Seal, that you can put on your store or on your product that we are helping to try to like really get every female founder out there, whether it's a corner store or you make bagels or you're in fashion or whatever it is, to really band together and support each other. Even Yelp is putting a filter on for female-founded businesses. So there's a female founder and a female-led business in every category. And it's important to know and support those women if they're doing something that you like.
I love the Girls Club.
We do too.
Down with the Boys Club. No, I'm just kidding. But it's interesting also that you're saying that you always want to be inspired and you always want to keep your hands in the business. What are you guys doing to stay inspired? And like, what's inspiring you right now, other than other female founders? But I'm looking at, you know, your bright and floral popping tops right now. They're so beautiful and they have a specific look, but they're both very different. So do each of you guys come to the table with different look, but you bring it together? Or do you feel like, you know, I'm curious because I'm not the creative. I'm science and math over here.
I think our most fun thing to do is to go shopping together, whether it's in a really nice store in New York or we're in the fields in Texas digging through vintage things. I think that's our happy place together. And because we're just, you know, holding things up and loving and sharing. And I like this, you like this, you know, that type of thing. But then we have our separate journeys. Like I went to the flea market on Sunday and I found this, or my husband and I went up to Ojai and I stopped by a store and found this, or I was digging on eBay and found this. We bring it to each other, or, you know, so many times, like she'll actually just buy me things. Like I got it in your size because we know what we like so much. But yeah, it's a constant journey. I mean, sometimes we'll literally just turn the radio off when we're driving to a shoot or a meeting and be like, what are you looking for in sweaters right now? What are we looking? What are we loving? And it's really, that's our favorite conversation because we know what we want to search for as consumers and what we want to design as designers. And that's just, it's a constant dialogue, or we'll just send each other links or pictures on Pinterest or Instagram or whatever. So
it's keeping you in your creative space.
Yes.
It's keeping you true to yourself. What percentage of your day would you say is spent in that space?
Sometimes it's like 2 weeks straight, and sometimes it'll be like one day a week or 1 hour a week. It kind of depends on what we have going on.
Yeah, like today we're going to go back and style a upcoming shoot, and we're going to look at protos some samples. So I say like today we're going to do like 4 hours and then we're going to our store and helping oversee them set up for a new launch of something. I feel that's creative. So I'd say a good amount today.
A lot. I mean, we're creative, I'd say all the time, but in, you know, I don't, we go through phases because we have a cycle for design, but like there's times where I have to like shut everything out and be like, what, I need to be in a vintage store. I need to only see beautiful things, or I need to take a walk. Like I need to be inspired. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I cannot be distracted. Like I need to be in that space. So we find the time.
I love that. I think that that is exactly what you guys learned kind of selling off Curran and Elliott and starting The Grade, is like to be true to yourself. You need to know what made you successful in the beginning and find a way to always make time for that.
Yep.
So speaking of making time for things, how are you guys making time in your busy schedules to take care of yourself, and do you inspire each other in that way as well?
We do inspire each other in that way, and we have different routines. So I'll let Emily start because she's on fire right now.
Give us the goods.
Let me see. Where do I even start? I mean, I work out really early. I work out before my kids get up. So I work out sometime between 5 and 6. Sometimes it'll go into 7, but if I don't do it then, it's not going to happen. So either someone comes to my house or I go somewhere, but I work out really early. I really want energy. Like I felt like after having children, I was really depleted and exhausted. And so I've worked really hard on having energy and doing the things I need to nurture myself to have it. When some of that is meditation and some of that is diet and some of that is caffeine. But I want energy. What else? I'm trying to think.
You should give examples of
what day, drinking.
Okay. Well, obviously I'm a Kelly fanatic. So Fab Four is very important to me. I work with Kelly. I've worked with a functional medicine doctor to help me with energy. I take all kinds of supplements to help me with that. I've noticed hormonal imbalances after having kids, which I've been able to work on a bit. We do food delivery at our office when I can convince everyone to do it for lunch. You know, I eat protein and vegetables and fat. So I try not to splurge. And when I do, I really enjoy it. But I try to find ways to splurge that fall within protein, fat, fiber,
greens. Which there's lots. This doesn't need to be a Kelly commercial.
But for real. I mean, it's true. And I really try to inspire everyone around me.
Why don't you give us an example of like, what does that 5 a.m. workout look like? And were you a morning person before, or was it something out of necessity, knowing that you couldn't get it in? You're just like, okay, I'm going to do this.
I definitely have always been a morning person. I'm not a night person. I like to go to bed early always. I really value my alone time in the morning after having kids. So I've really made it a priority to get up before them and have enough time for myself, whether that's just breathing, whether it's sitting and drinking my coffee, doing emails, or working out. Right now I'm doing like strength training, HIIT, high intensity training. I hike a lot when I'm not doing that, just to keep my body moving and get my steps in, because I'm like obsessed with steps right now.
How are you tracking those?
My Apple Watch.
Yay!
And hiking really makes a huge difference, obviously, because you're walking for 3 miles or whatever. But so yeah, I do that in the morning. And then I get off to work, drop kids off, get off to work. And I really try to eat healthy at lunch. And lunch is like a really big thing at our office. We all sit around and talk about, what do you want for lunch? And so I start bringing my lunch a little bit so I wouldn't have to think about that anymore and just know what I'm eating. Or we do delivery.
When you guys are doing delivery and you convince people to do delivery, what's your go-to?
Well, we just did Kushi. We've tried a few. I like...
So these are meal delivery programs. Yeah. And for those of you guys who follow my Instagram, you might have seen me post Kushi before. They're organic and clean proteins, pasture raised, and they just send meals like a regular meal delivery company, but it doesn't have to be a full cooler of breakfast, snack, lunch, snack, dinner, dessert.
Yeah, just do lunch.
Yeah. So that flexibility, I think, is really important to people nowadays. One of the suggestions I might have for your office or for you guys would be to get together and look at all the places that you order healthy food from. And when you're in a sane mind and you're in a healthy space, I want you to write down what is one or two options that you would order there if you were not emotionally stressed out, not craving foods. Print it out and, you know, put it on a corkboard at your office. And if and just tell your staff that you don't want to have a conversation about what you guys are having for lunch. You want to stay in the business and you want to stay in the day to day. Because what's interesting is the minute someone starts to talk about food, you start to think about food and your hunger hormones actually surge. You're waiting for that palatable and highly palatable food. And the longer you wait before you make the order, the higher the chances that you're ordering the pizza and not the chicken and veggies.
You're so right.
So what I would suggest is for you guys just to sit down, list off all the places, whether it's Takaya or like, you know, La Scala, or if you live in LA, you know these places. If you don't, I'm sorry. but you can do it in your hometown as well. It's just to write down and make a master healthy takeout list for you. And maybe put one that's the cleanest of the clean and super boring and simple, but really nice and something that's going to, you know, shut down those hunger hormones and make you feel good. And then maybe put like those two places that you can snag something that makes you feel a little bit more, if you're having an emotional day, makes you feel a little bit more kind of quote unquote food cozy, if you will. And for me, that's like the coconut flour chicken fingers from Erewhon.
Yes.
You know, where you're just like, I need a chicken finger. It doesn't need to be a McNugget, because what's a McNugget, right? But that might be something that you guys could both do. And then you're not having that conversation. No one's triggering you to think about food. And most of the time, if they're already talking about food, it's because they haven't had breakfast and they're probably, their caffeine's starting to wear off and they're starting to crash, feel less, you know, a little maybe like delirious, less ability to focus. Then someone says, hey, let's, my brain needs food. Let's talk about it. So that would be maybe a tip that I would take back
to
the office.
Love it. We're
doing it today. Great tip.
And then you just have your healthy food list. And if someone's taking out, they know they can just look at that list for you. And you can say A or B or one or two, or maybe you just have one option from places.
I like that.
Yeah. Okay, Mayor, what about you?
Oh, okay. So I feel like I just finally found my groove, maybe because I have had three children and my youngest is two and I'm officially not post-pregnancy anymore by several months. I've actually struggled with autoimmune disease my whole life and inflammation is a big issue for me. So probably 5 or 6 years ago, I cut out gluten. So my entire diet is dictated by non-gluten options. I also kind of need to eat a lot of calories. So that's the trickiest part, is that usually gluten is the easiest way to like thing to grab. And by not having that as an option, I just need a lot of protein throughout the day. So some days are better than others. Emily's a very good influence on me. We were just in New York and we ate very well. And it's it really does make me feel better, because the second I make a bad choice, I get all sorts of symptoms. So, and then in terms of exercising, I actually just started exercising like 8 months ago. And I do a class called WOLA, and it's by The Grove. And it's 45 minutes and it's interval training. And it's wham, bam, thank you, ma'am. And I've gotten really strong. And I've officially on last weekend did 100 of the classes. I hit my century mark.
Wow. That's amazing. That's consistent.
It's consistent. I usually do about 4 times a week, and three of them are on the weekend, Friday night, Saturday morning, and Sunday morning. So then I feel less pressure when I have a busy work week. But I had been known before to hit a morning class on the way to work and bring clothes and change basically and put on perfume. And go to the office if we don't have any meetings, which is just the honest truth of a working mother. I like working out in the morning. I have 3 kids that have to be at school really early, so I can't do that as much as I'd like. But sometimes I'll squeeze a 7:30 p.m. 45-minute workout. And then I actually, this is the funniest thing, I just started playing volleyball in a league.
Okay, in a gym or at the beach?
In a gym.
Okay.
And I used to play competitively, and there's a whole bunch of women. And it's I played at 8 o'clock on Monday. And it's mostly just because I physically want to see if I can do the things I used to be able to do pre, you know, marriages and children and stressful work. And to get my body to do the things it used to do has been a fun challenge. And I'm halfway there. I can hang with the young people.
I love it.
Straight out of high school and college.
I love it. I have so many questions.
Yes.
Let's start with volleyball. We'll work our way backwards. Did you play in college?
I played competitively in high school and I actually swam in college. So I was a competitive
athlete.
I was an athlete, and I realized that there's so many amazing exercise classes in yoga and Pilates, but what I've identified about my my soul and my body is that I'm an athlete that needs intensive, strong, competitive kind of activity for me to feel happy and for me to feel strong. So I just like, if you were to put me in a ballet bar class, I would one, be terrible at it and be unhappy. So I just identified that about myself in the last few years. And so I found my groove is that I'm kind of competitive and I like things to be fast and loud and strong and I like to sweat and then move on. That's kind of, I found that about myself and I'm happy I got there because I felt discouraged for many years. Like I should be, you know, sweating in a yoga class like all my friends who look amazing. And I realized that that's just not good for me. It's taken me several years to find that. And
back to yourself.
And I look at myself in the mirror and I was working out last week and I hit my 100th class. I'm just going to bring that up several times. Yeah. It's a big achievement for me. And I looked at my body and, you know, it's not perfect and it's not what it used to be, but I'm like, you know what? I gave birth to 3 babies. I've taken care of an ill person. I've built businesses. I've overcome an autoimmune disease, lived with it. So the fact that I'm even like doing what I'm doing and is just, hell yeah. I'm really like, you know what? This is awesome.
It is awesome. And I think celebrating those wins are so important to keeping the momentum and keeping you going and excited about it.
Yes.
Can't be like, oh, I'm going. I just hit 100 classes. I don't like this dimple or this bump or this curve. It's like the other way around. You have to be really proud of yourself for what you're doing because 100 classes is a lot of classes.
It's a lot of classes.
Especially if you've just started 8 months ago.
Right.
Yeah. Amazing.
And I think the other key is I keep exercise clothes in my car.
Great tip.
Right? So like I'll like maybe be running errands on Saturday morning at the grocery store and then be like, you know, I could squeeze in a 40-minute class really quick and I don't have to stop home and get approval from my kids. Like I just go and do it. And that's been a key to my success.
Prior proper planning.
Yes.
So let's take it back to the autoimmune disease.
Yeah.
Why don't you tell everyone what you personally dealt with? How did you find out? And how did you start taking care of yourself? And what was your road to recovery?
So when I was 18, I was recruited to UCLA as a swimmer. And in the middle of training, I got a really bad virus. And it was kind of like the flu strep thing. And in that competitive environment, I was encouraged to continue to practice. And
sure.
Just because I was young and didn't kind of know my body and respect my body, I trained through that. And it essentially destroyed my immune system. And a lot of autoimmune diseases get triggered by trauma like that. So I had a fever for, I think, 19 months. And swollen lymph nodes and swollen, I could barely walk at times because I had arthralgia and muscle pain and just debilitating fatigue. You know, when you're young, I just powered through because I wanted to go to the party and I wanted to hang out with my roommates and I wanted to walk to class and do all the other things. And so I probably didn't take care of myself the way that I would now if you were feeling sick. You know, I wasn't living at home. I lived with roommates. And, you know, every semester it was kind of like I was given ultimatum, like, if you don't get it better, you have to move home and take some time off school. And that just was not an option for me. I was like, no, I don't want to be a sick person. I want to be a student. I'm going to get through this. So I had every test imaginable. I failed every test, but everything was pretty non-conclusive. My symptoms were very much like someone with lupus. And then in the journey, kind of discovered finally that there are so many autoimmune diseases that don't have names yet and that they're in the family of lupus or MS or whatever. And that I just have one of those unnamed ones. And to this day, a lot of my scans and everything, they come back showing that I have something. They just don't know what it is. And that it's just management. And I've been on all sorts of medications through my life, and those all have side effects that are uncomfortable for me. So right now, the key to my success is sleep. Like the second I don't get sleep, I have some pain. I have a lot of pain in my body. And eating well helps me. I can't have anything. I can't have a diet soda. That is literally like putting poison into my body. Things like that. Simple. And those are simple to avoid. Exercise has definitely helped me. Stress is, it's just like anyone. Like what are your triggers of not feeling well? Mine just get amplified. And also just I live in some version of pain all the time. And I breathe through it and I'm used to it. And I can't get too cold or too hot or those type of things.
But, are you feeling comfortable now?
I'm besides being very tired because we've been having some late nights, I feel great.
Okay, good.
Yeah. So it's funny, you know, through years and learning from important people, like people you work with or you or whatnot, is just that you take in all the information about nutrition and exercise and all of a sudden it becomes really relevant and necessary. And so I just live in a place of just kind of seeking. For me to feel like other people, I just have to, you know,
work a little bit harder.
I'm
so glad that you're taking such good care of yourself. I know that you've been through a lot, obviously the trauma in college and then losing your husband.
Yep.
For those people out there who are taking care of someone who is ill, I know that you can start to take care of that person more than you take care of yourself, or, you know, you let yourself go to the wayside completely because you're just all in.
Yeah.
For them.
Yeah. I paid the price when my husband was sick and dying, and I was also building a business with Emily, and I had a toddler, and I didn't take care of myself. And you can, adrenaline gets you through those times. And then the second sort of, you know, it ends or it quiets, your body pays the price. And I have done a lot of restorative work in the years. And grief really can do a number to your body.
Yeah.
And I've actually met a lot of women who have lost husbands in the last couple of years. And we've really talked about how our bodies have reacted. And not just like the months after, but like the years after. So if I could go back and tell my stressed younger self what to do, I probably would have nourished myself better and taken good, you know, forced myself to take care of myself just to be a better caretaker and a better person. But of course, you know, hindsight's 50-50.
Yeah, totally.
But yeah, I mean, I think emotional, and Emily and I, after when we were leaving Kern Elliott and all that, that was, it was all a big, a lot of change. And it did, I think both of us felt a lot of health issues after that too. And you don't make the connection of your emotional health and your body health when you're in it and when you're younger until later. And you realize you have to nurture both of them so much. And someone once said to me, like, if you're going to live a life like a competitive athlete and a marathon runner, then you have to eat and drink like one. Like, you know, like pretend you're about to go run another race. What are you going to grab? And so I kind of think that way when I know I'm about to endure an emotional thing, or I know I'm going to have a rough day or a challenging day or whatever, is that I try to eat or drink like an athlete would, even when I'm having an emotional day.
I'm so glad to hear that you have learned to take such good care of yourself. And
it's a work in progress.
Yeah.
Some days are better than others.
Every day, right? Well, I always like to close out the show getting to know what you guys think body love is and like how you nurture it in yourselves, and being the mothers of daughters, how you're helping them to nurture that body love in themselves.
I mean, what do I think of body love? I think we talked a little bit about this just now, Merritt did, but it's mental and physical love. So finding if they're so connected and thinking through where you are mentally and physically and being in the moment of that and loving it, whether it's in a good place or a bad place, and trying to just be better. I feel like with age, I've started to, like what Merritt was saying as well, I love my body for producing two children. I love my body differently than I did as a young adult, where it was more objectified. I feel like now it's more personal to me. I think right now I'm really working a lot on mental health, which I think is also part of body love, because without taking the time to have clarity or a space, it's just hard to find that love in yourself. And so I've been working a lot with meditation and things like that. I grew up in a household that didn't spend a lot of time talking about bodies, and I'm very grateful for that for my mother and father. It was really about health, and I was a dancer, so I would go to ballet class and dance 9 hours a day and be a crazy person. And that was an athlete mentality, and I fed that. So I try to do that in my own home, is we don't really talk a lot about bodies per se, except for nurturing them. And I think that's important with having two young girls, to eat healthy and to talk about health and how that gives you energy and brain power, and not talk about shape of body. I think we're starting as a society to see, just be more inclusive on what bodies are and what they look like. And there's not one ideal in a magazine. And that's so important to me. And I love now that when I'm on Instagram or I'm looking at billboards around town, I'm seeing all different kinds of people, because that's the kind of people I'd see walking down the street. I don't know why there was this ideal in glossy magazines. It was so different from reality. And that has helped feed body love for me.
Are you guys doing anything specifically at The Great to continue to share that original authenticity that you guys came together with at a young age and really be inclusive today?
Yeah, I mean, we try to create clothing for the main event of your life, which is just living your life. And I think we do a lot of open sizing. We size things.
What is open sizing?
Like we size something 0 to 3. So like, what is a 0? It's like a certain set of loose parameters. And what is a 3? It's a certain set of loose parameters. I think we just try to like open up how inclusive we are. And we can still do better. We're still working to do better and to add more sizes and more lengths of things. But I think we try to be easy about how things fit. And
really perpetuate the idea of personal style. Wear it big, wear it small, wear it high, wear it low. Like just really individualizing what your experience is with clothes. So I think we're working on being more inclusive, but it's a huge pillar of what we're trying to do day to day.
Yeah, I mean, I think the core of our business is casual wear and knits, in particular knits and twills and denim. And I think that that is celebrating the part of your life that you don't see on the runway. It's the part of your life that is going on a long walk with your family or hiking with your friends or snuggling on your couch and reading a book that makes you feel happy and really creating clothes for that. And I think shining a light on that part of being a female is kind of what we do through how we're dressing you. And it's become more important. Those moments have become more important shaping who we are. And just people didn't, you know, shop for that. That wasn't what we bought. That wasn't what we saw in shiny magazines. And now all of a sudden are people like, no, I need 300 t-shirts because I need one to work out and one to sleep and one to wear under my blazer for my date night and then to drop off the kids and that type of thing. So I think we're dressing people to be women to become multidimensional and active and comfortable.
I love that because that's the lifestyle I want to live. I mean, keeping workout clothes in my car, but knowing I could sweat in the t-shirt that I was wearing under my blazer is a great feeling. It's flexibility and it's allowing you to build this life that you really want and feel good doing it. I mean, I think, and you guys probably know this firsthand, you both look adorable, you probably feel great.
Yeah. Everything has to be soft.
Awesome. Well, it was so fun sitting down with you girls, women, female founders. Tell our listeners where they can find you.
So our website is thisisthegreat.com and our Instagram, and we have emilymerritt.com as well. And our Instagram is emilymerritt and thisisthegreat_.
And we have a store on Melrose in Los Angeles. We're there sometimes, but it's also a really just fun place to visit and shop.
And it's styled beautifully.
Thank you.
I think the wall you're sitting in front of is me trying to knock off your wall color.
It's gorgeous.
Well, thanks for listening, guys. Check us back next time and we'll see you later.
Thank you for listening to Be Well by Kelly. Please subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Learn more at bewellbykelly.com and follow me on Instagram at bewellbykelly. I would love if you picked up my books, Body Love and Body Love Every Day. They're sold on Amazon and at all major booksellers.